Billions of years ago, a race of immortals harnessed the most powerful force in existence, the emerald energy of willpower. These immortals, the guardians of the universe, built a world from where they could watch over all of existence, the planet Oa. They divided the universe into 3,600 sectors. A ring powered by the energy of will was sent to every sector to select a recruit. In order to be chosen by the ring, it was said one must be without fear. Together, these 3,600 recruits formed the Intergalactic Peacekeepers, known as the Green Lantern Corps.
Emerald Echo, a Green Lantern podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Donnie. Donnie, how's it going?
Hello, everyone out there in the multiverse. It is Donnie, a.k.a. the Emerald Enthusiast, the man who knows how, the man who knows why they passed on the ice cream.
See, even when he messes up his own introduction, I can't do what he does justice, so I let him do it. I'm glad
you could edit that out, maybe. That I was like, oh, that's going to come off so good.
It's okay. You know what? It adds character. So I like to leave our little faux pas in, as long as they're not too egregious. But, you know, so it's good. Everything's all right with you, sir? You're doing well?
We're just dealing with the virus, just like everyone around the world, trying to social distance and take precautions. And hopefully everyone out there who is listening to this or any of our podcasts, hopefully you're doing the same. Protect yourself out there.
Yes, sir. That's definitely wise and sage advice. So we will hopefully we're all taking, the necessary precautions and steps and such. And we'll get through this one day at a time. But to make life a little bit easier and to just sort of pass some time, we have some Green Lantern talk to entertain you with, hopefully. Hopefully we're entertaining you with it. Otherwise, maybe you could take a nap while you're listening to us. I don't know, whichever one you prefer. But we're here anyway to provide you with something. Let's start with first things first. We have to wish the Green Lantern a happy 80th anniversary, I should say. So, Donnie, why don't you tell us a little bit about the 80th anniversary of our favorite Emerald Ring Bearer, or Bearers, I should say.
Yes, so in particular, this anniversary commemorates the release of Green Lantern Volume 1, and of course that's Alan Scott. For people who are not familiar with the Golden Age Green Lantern. And he was conceptualized by artist Martin Nodell. And his first, at least the first story, was written by Bill Finger. And it's interesting. I just recently read an interview with Martin Nodell. And, you know, he came from a time when he actually kind of hid the fact that he worked in comics. There was a time, you know, 80 years ago when, you know, comics were kind of looked down upon as, kind of a lowbrow form of media. And I thought, you know, he died in 2006. And I wondered, I was like, what would he think of all the celebration and seeing, you know, comic books, you know, take over TV and movies? How much differently would he react to that now? So, I wish he was around for us to tell him that we certainly appreciate him kicking off this corner of the DC universe for us, because, you know, it spawned an entire panoramic view of characters, so many great characters that came later with about, you know, Hal Jordan's universe and Kyle and John and all these additions to the DC universe that kicked off with his conceptualizing Alan Scott. So we say thank you to him and everyone who's worked on Green Lantern comics over the years. Everyone, you know, both of us and everyone who considers himself or herself a Green Lantern fan, we say thank you.
Yes, indeed. I actually do enjoy me some Alan Scott, and going back to the original conception, and then I really enjoyed the revamp in terms of the Earth 2 continuity that was going on during the New 52. But, you know, and more importantly, I think that, you know, I'm hoping that it's just a matter of time before another JSA book is announced.
Oh, likewise.
And that Alan Scott is at the forefront of that.
Yes.
Because to me, look, DC, we're going to have a chat here. There's two things. On the Green Lantern 80th anniversary, there's two things I need to implore to DC. And that is, one, Alan Scott in a JSA book is a must. So get on that. I'm going to be like Batista with Triple H. Give me what I want. So Alan Scott in a JSA book is one. And two, Kyle Rayner.
Yes, indeed.
Why is he sitting on a shelf, nowhere to be found? Somebody do something with that, please. And thank you. And those are my two recommendations / wants. So there's that out of the way. But the good news is that comics are slowly making their way back to us. So why don't we give people some updates on the comic book shipping and release situation?
Okay, so the Green Lantern 80th Anniversary Spectacular, the last I saw, it was actually due to be released on June 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a number of variant covers, and here's the rundown of the variant covers. We have the 1940s variant by Nicola Scott, the 50s variant by Matt Taylor, the 60s variant by Doug Mankey, the 70s variant, of course, by Neil Adams,
mm-hmm.
The 80s variant by David Finch, the 90s variant by Philip Tan, the 2000s variant by Ivan Rice and Aklar Albert, and the 2010s variant cover by Jim Lee and Scott Williams. And there's a myriad of other Green Lantern creators, you know, artists and past writers who are also a part of this.
Right. They're all beautiful covers. I will say that right off the bat. You know, unfortunately, I can't go crazy and get them all. I wish I could, but
I'm going to. It may take a while, but I'm getting them.
I'm glad you are, and I hope maybe, you know, over time I can do the same. But on the initial outset, the ones that really sort of catch my eye, if you will, is the main cover. I think it's by Liam Sharp.
I believe that's the one with it's Alan Scott in the middle, and it's kind of has a space background with
and everybody's planets, there.
Yeah, surrounding it. Yes.
So I really like that one. The Neil Adams one is a beauty. Of course, the 90s Kyle Rayner variant.
Yes.
Because I'm a sucker for anything Jim Lee draws, the Jim Lee variant. Those are my sort of top picks, or top ones, if you will.
And by the way, both Daryl Banks and Ron Mars, they are involved in this too.
Yes.
So pretty much, I mean, you've got so much, so many names here. You know, Mike Grell, Denny O'Neill is involved in it, Venditti, Peter Tomasi. So, yeah, you can find this online, and pretty much anyone who has been, I think, involved in Green Lantern. There are just so many people of note who have come back to take part in this. And that's very special.
So yeah, it is. And I'd really, you know what I would really like? Again, this is going to echo what I just said. But imagine spinning out from this Daryl Banks and Ron Mars return to Kyle Rayner. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I would be waiting at the comic book shop before it opened every day just to see if you know my comics actually got there. That would be just heavenly to have that duo return to Green Lantern.
Dear DC, which is part of Warner Brothers, which also owns HBO Max. HBO Max just gave a lot of DC fans what they want. I don't know if DC wants to follow suit with this you know, relaunch of a Kyle Rayner book with the two original creators. But yeah, something to consider. Just think about it. But any other comics news before we there's some solicitations,
sure.
Right?
Sure. And speaking of throwbacks, there's a trade paperback coming out. It's called Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Space Traveling Heroes. It's due to release July 21st. And it collects Green Lantern Volume 2, numbers 90 through 106. And so you, a lot of those names that we just mentioned, like Mike Grell and Dennis O'Neill, that's you know, that's part of their run. We also have Justice League Odyssey number 22 coming out. And of course, Jessica is still part of that. Mm-hmm. Justice League 49, where John is right now, that will be on sale July 14th. And we also have Green Lantern Season 2, number 5, coming out in July the 7th. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking about Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 2. That is set to come out. The last date I heard on this, and I don't think this is a hard and fast date, that's August the 4th. And also, Far Sector is now bi-monthly, so I've read issues all the way through issues 5. I'm not sure if 6 has released yet or not.
Not that I've seen, but definitely.
But yes, it's bi-monthly now.
Okay, which is interesting. But we will. The cool thing is, because Far Sector is a 12-issue miniseries, right?
Correct.
Or maxi series, I should say, because it's 12 issues. And Season 2 of Green Lantern comprises 12 issues, right?
Yes, as far as I know, it's going to be 12 issues.
Right. So what we will do on this show is once each of them reach their sixth issue, we will do an episode reviewing those specific first six of each series. So be on the listen out. I can't say look out because we don't do video, but be on the listen out for that.
Yes, we will. We will encapsulate the storylines and hopefully capture your imagination by reviewing that for you.
Yeah, and then if this lockdown lasts much longer, we may even do a read through. We'll get some people on here and help us read. I don't think we're that. You could do it. Nobody wants to hear me read the books. But the other thing that you mentioned that I really am looking forward to is Green Lantern, Earth 1, Volume 2. Donnie and I are going to review, we're going to figure out a date and sit down and review book one, or Volume 1 of Earth 1, for sure. But that one really intrigued me. It was an interesting spin on the mythology. And so I'm looking forward to, revisiting that one again for our review purposes, but also getting the next part of the story. Because I thought that was really intriguing, and I don't want to go into it deeply because I want to save it for my review after a reread. I mean, it's been a while since I read it, so hopefully my opinion only, grows. My fondness for it grows instead of goes the other way. But after the first read-through, I really liked it, so I'm looking forward to that adventure continuing. How about you?
Oh, definitely. There's a number of things coming out that I'm really excited about. And, that's definitely one of them. And, the variant covers and the conclusion of Far Sector as well. I mean, I'm into all of this, and there's rarely a Green Lantern story that I don't like. And I really, I think I said on the first episode, there's such versatility here. You can tell so many different types of stories with so many characters that it's just always intriguing.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely, there's a lot to look forward to in terms of Green Lantern content, even though, really, there's only, you know, we're not getting as many books as we once did, but there's still a lot to look forward to where Green Lantern is concerned, and that's the exciting part about it, for sure.
And speaking of Alan Scott, I have to hope that at some point he's going to make an appearance on Stargirl.
Oh, yes. I mean, that has to be a thing. Because you could do that, Donnie. Like, having Alan Scott on Stargirl would and should not have any bearing on what HBO Max is going to do with their Green Lantern adaptation. So I definitely am in the camp of whether it's this season or, you know, potential future seasons. I want to see in person Alan Scott, and also give me another version of Jay Garrick. I know we have him on the Flash, but give me a Stargirl iteration of him too. Why not? Let's go. That's full on, you know.
Yeah, those are two characters you just have to have in the JSA.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no way around it.
It's like you can't do a Justice League live action adaptation without Superman and Batman. I mean, you could, but you better not call it. You better call it Justice League Detroit or whatever the heck the other one was called. You know, the CND listers showed up. But no, for me, there are certain characters on both teams that have to be there. And also, while we're talking about, I know this is not that podcast, but while we're here talking about who we'd like to see on Stargirl, Hawkman, please. Thank you.
Yes, sure. Yes.
Yeah. There it is. I'm doing a lot of wishing today. It's not, you know, I know Christmas is far off, but my birthday is, you know, nearing. So maybe, hey, as a birthday present, anybody, hey, you know, I'll take all of these, but really, the Kyle Rayner series is like, if DC is going to give me one birthday present that I've asked for, it'd be the Kyle Rayner series in the comics. But speaking of, I know I teased HBO Max and their version of Green Lantern, you know, the Green Lantern show. We don't have news on that, but we do have news that HBO Max and Warner Brothers have decided to go ahead and release the Snyder Cut, which has been something that a lot of fans have been campaigning for since 2017.
And not all of them in the appropriate fashion, I might add.
So. Right. and I'm going to go into that more on the when I'm dealing with the Batman and Superman aspect. But for right now, with the Snyder Cut, what we're going to talk about is the potential involvement of Green Lantern. Now, what we do know is that Warner Brothers is committing, Warner Brothers and HBO are committing, HBO Max are committing $20 to $30 million for Snyder to finish the CGI and everything that he, you know, to rescore the film, re-edit it, the whole nine yards. Like they're going full court press. And if you
I like
remember,
how you said that, full court press. Yes. Yeah. That's a good image. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. And so if you remember the theatrical version, during the war with Steppenwolf scene from the past, there was a member of the Green Lantern Corps present during that battle.
Yeah, that was Yalan Gur.
I was going to ask you who that was, because
yeah,
you would know, and yeah, like you're more well-versed in who all these people are than I am. All the more obscure ones anyway. But apparently that wasn't all that Snyder had planned for the Green Lantern Corps, was it?
No, I have heard that there were a couple of scenes, and I don't know how far into production they got, but there was at least one scene that was intended to be Batman, or at least Bruce Wayne, interacting with Kilowog and Tamar Rae, that they come to Earth for some reason And possibly one or more scenes with Hal Jordan. And it could be that those things were connected where Tomar and Kilowog were looking for Hal Jordan for some reason, or, you know, possibly asking Batman, you know, for, his opinion on, you know, who could, from the Green Lantern Corps, could help the Justice League. We don't know how far those scenes were finished. If they were left, you know, on the cutting room floor, if they were just conceptualized, storyboarded, or whether there was actually some headway made with those scenes. But it seems almost universal that with the rumors I hear, there was some more Green Lantern involvement beyond just the flashback with Yalen Gur.
Right. So now, the interesting thing here is, while I don't think Snyder is going to be able to go with the budget that he has, to go in and necessarily build a ton of sets and cast a whole bunch of new people for this thing. What I can see happening is that if Kilowog and Tomar Rae were entirely CG characters, then bringing them into the fray would be easier. Now, look, I know CGI takes work, but they're giving him the budget for the CGI. But it'd be easier than having to, you know, to cast new actors and get them on a soundstage and film and all that kind of stuff. So if that has been conceptualized and previous, I think we'll see those two. We could definitely still see those scenes.
It certainly would be nice.
Whether we actually see somebody as Hal Jordan, that I can't say with any kind of confidence one way or the other, because I don't know if Snyder had secret, you know, maybe he cast somebody and they purposely didn't announce Hal Jordan because they wanted to leave it a surprise. So, you know, I don't know. But in the Hollywood Reporter article, it does say that Snyder has been in contact with most of his extensive voice cast to be available if they're needed, which, you know, because apparently there is, at the bare minimum, there's going to be some additional voiceover work, dialogue work. So, like I said, who knows? But I think of the two scenes that you're sort of describing, or two aspects you're sort of describing, I think it's more likely that we see Tomar Rae and Kilowog than it is necessarily Hal Jordan. So, but we'll have to wait and see. I'd like to see all three personally, but I'll take what I can get there.
The more the merrier.
But I do know that the original past war against Steppenwolf is going to be more involved. It was going to be more involved in Snyder's original version, and I think we'll get a longer look at that.
I'd like to see at least one scene with Darkseid, even if it's just him, you know, brooding on Apocalypse. That would be great.
I think that's, you're going to see Darkseid. We're going to see Darkseid in this. Of that I have no doubt. Because he had a voice actor, and there was previous. So Darkseid, I'm fairly confident that we're going to get Darkseid. So, yeah, that's exciting. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, lots of potential here, but assume that this makes money for the studio, that this is, or HBO Max, this is a big, you know, a big hit. We know there's a HBO Green Lantern series coming. Do you think that at the very least, the design and the look of Tomar Rae and Kilowog that we see here could be the same that we eventually see in the HBO Max Green Lantern series?
That's a very good question. It might depend on, you know, how people react to what they see with the Snyder Cut, but to me, it seems like they would have at least some of the Green Lantern footage shot before this comes out. So I don't know of any plans of Snyder, you know, assisting on the Green Lantern series. So I would say that it's probably not connected, but right. You know, who knows? If people really like those versions, maybe we could see something like that.
Because as far as I know, they still haven't started casting for the Green Lantern thing yet. So I don't know how much of it is like what kind of designs or looks they have. Last update we had, they were still scripting and stuff. So who knows? Like, who knows? But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens from the Green Lantern perspective in this Snyder Cut. It's definitely interesting for sure. I'm looking forward to it. And this is coming from, again, just to let everybody know where I'm coming from. I borderline love Man of Steel. I was quite disappointed with BVS. So that's where I'm coming from as a fan. But I am looking forward to Zack Snyder's Justice League for sure. Because at the end of the day, I'm a DC fan and I'm going to watch, like, no matter what my initial thoughts going in are, I'm going to watch it and hope that it's great because I want everything that DC puts out to be great.
Yeah, that's a good perspective, yeah.
That's just the way I am. So,
yeah.
We'll see. I mean, the release date they're targeting is 2021. So I'm all for, at this point, once we get the 80th anniversary special of the Green Lantern, you know, the comic, I'm all for fast-forwarding through the rest of 2020 and skipping right to 2021. That's just me, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's you know, this has been the most boring year ever. I mean, as far as, you've got to look for entertainment where you can get it and, you know, normality where you can get it. So, yeah, if there was a fast-forward button, I think a lot of people would utilize that.
So if I find that remote from Click, Daniel, I'll let you know. We'll fast-forward to 2021. But in the meantime, we're just have to deal with what we're given. So, but I think that pretty much wraps up the news, doesn't it?
I think so. And, you know, and I'm with you on that. I'm a fan of the DC movies. You know, I was a big fan of Man of Steel. I actually did like Batman versus Superman, and I like Justice League. I wasn't as enthusiastic about it as the Snyder Cut as some people have been, because I was more interested in, you know, the DC movies going forward as opposed to a different version of a previously released movie. But if this does end up, you know, with Henry Cavill returning possibly for more appearances, and if this does regenerate some interest, then I'm all for it.
Oh, definitely. If Henry Cavill returns, if nothing else, but if this cut does nothing else but allow for Henry Cavill to continue playing Superman, which my suspicion is that it will, then it will have all been worth it. Like, I know we're a Green Lantern podcast, but we know we're getting Green Lantern on HBO Max. So if at the end of the day we don't see any Green Lantern, but I get Henry Cavill back as Superman, I'll take that trade-off.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big Henry Cavill fan too. I would love for him to continue on as Superman. So
we'll see. But we'll see. We'll keep you informed on if we hear anything regarding the Green Lantern's involvement in the Snyder version of Justice League, and when we have something to talk about in regards to that, of course we will. So let's get into main portion of this episode, which is a spotlight on the early days of Green Lantern John Stewart.
Yes, John Stewart, the first African-American character to headline a DC comic in 1971. So no small feat there. This was an important character, and he he still abides today. He has a very large fan base, not only because of the comics, but because of his appearance on the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoon. And he was just recently in several of the releases, the DC animated movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was a creation, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 87, creation of writer Dennis O'Neill and artist Neil Adams. And I actually met Neil Adams a few years ago, and one of the things I had to say to him was I had previously listened to an interview where he said that someone at DC, and I don't remember who it was, had suggested the name Lincoln Washington for John Stewart. And Neil said, no, that kind of sounds like a slave name. I think we need to pick something a little bit more, you know, less on the nose there as far as, you know, than Lincoln Washington. So he's like, how about John Stewart? So that was how we got the name of the first African-American hero for DC. And so the last episode we touched on Guy Gardner being injured in this issue. This is Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 87. And so what that means is that there was no backup for Hal Jordan in case Hal was incapacitated for whatever reason. So the Guardians see that injury and they decide we need another backup for Hal Jordan.
Yes.
It would have been nice of them to maybe show up a little bit earlier and maybe stop Guy from getting hurt. But, you know, the Guardians are a little aloof. You never know how they're going to operate. Yeah. So in this comic, the scene shifts to what is called an urban ghetto, where we see a police officer hassling some young black men for playing dominoes on the street. And they are instantly confronted by a much larger, very confident black man, which is, of course, John Stewart. And the expressions here, these scenes are just drawn beautifully by Neil Adams. If you've never seen this issue, definitely take the time and find it somewhere. It's been reprinted in trades, and it is just gorgeous old school artwork.
Oh, the detail is incredible, yeah.
Oh, yes. So the police officer's partner, there's two police officers, he actually calls his partner out and says, you know, you didn't respect those people and you didn't earn any respect. And so he's pulled away while John stares him down. And the scene then shifts to the top of a building where Hal and a guardian, who I kind of assume is Ganthet, but he's never identified as Ganthet.
Right.
So they watch on, and Hal ironically questions whether John is the best choice to be his backup because of his attitude. Now, that's a little laughable coming from Hal Jordan.
Yeah, that's like the pot calling the kettle, you know, whatever the saying, however the saying goes.
Pot calling the kettle black. You know, Hal and John are, you know, that's why I think they've become such good friends over the years. There's a lot of similarities to their personalities. They're both brave, and they've both got a lot of swagger, a little arrogance. And
they're both like punching Batman in the face. So they're
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's obviously that's not in this issue, but my favorite John moment comes from a Green Lantern Rebirth when he got up in Batman's face and he said, you know, Hal has always been the man without fear. And what is Batman without fear? He got right in his face and said, just a man. And I was like, oh, John, he's not scared of Batman at all. You got to love that.
No, yeah, definitely not. Yeah.
So if we get back to the comic at hand here, the scene cuts to Hal Jordan and John having a drink, and Hal gives John the lowdown on being a Green Lantern. And John, he says that he's an unemployed architect, which that's another character trait that persists until this day is John being an architect. That's part of his, part of being the master builder. Not only does he actually build buildings for a living, he makes a lot of intricate building-like things for his constructs. And so John says, hey, you know, I'm up for some direction right now. So he's in. And he actually jokes. He says, maybe you better call me Black Lantern. Which, now that has a totally different connotation these days.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to be called Black Lantern at this point.
Yeah.
That means you're dead.
Yeah, that means you're dead and you're reanimated and a ring is wearing you instead of the other way around. So
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So we see Hal training John and he teaches him the oath. And John thinks for the most part it's kind of corny, but he goes along with it. And Hal creates a uniform for John. And this is another another beautiful panel that we see here from Neil Adams. It's a bird's eye view of John refusing to wear the mask. And he was like, you know, this black man, let's it all hang out. So I don't need the mask.
Yeah. Again, just his attitude and his confidence. I really, really, you know.
It right away, it's a character that's, it's just, he's very eye-catching. It's very attention-grabbing.
Right. Yeah. And I think, again, not to belittle Guy Gardner, but I think in terms of first appearances go, I think John definitely stands out far more than Guy.
Yeah, definitely so. And just much more memorable. You know, Guy, he only had a few appearances in like his first, I don't know, like 10 years. And again, they weren't nearly as memorable as some of these. Now, not that he doesn't develop into a great character in his own right, but you know, when John Stewart hit the scene, he made a splash. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
And also, I just want to, before you continue with the story,
sure.
I just want to comment on what you said about the whole police confrontation for something as simple as playing, what were they playing again?
Dominoes.
Dominoes on the street. You know, and this is a sad statement that I have to make, unfortunately, but that is unfortunately still the kind of crap we see today. You know, that kind of scenario playing out where, you know, certain people are being accused of a crime and all they're doing is, you know, let's say hanging out with friends on the street or you know, going for a run or what have you. So it's that kind of bigotry, unfortunately, is still prevalent, and it's a shame that it is. But it was that scene was very poignant.
I was thinking the same thing as I was making my notes on this issue. I'm like, you know, we are seeing a lot of videos these days of, you know, young black men,
yes,
you know, being accused of things and situations being handled in a way that are just terrible. And it's something that America is confronting right now. And it's a difficult thing to watch some of these videos, like the one you just talked about. So
it certainly is. I just, you know, it's a shame that we couldn't have that it wasn't as simple as the Green Lantern coming down and putting a stop to this. I wish it was, but unfortunately it isn't, but hopefully as a human society, we'll hopefully at some point wise up and get past that.
Yeah. Yeah. We could all stand to be a little bit nicer to one another. So
certainly.
Yeah. So back to the comic, John and Hal are flying over an airport when a fuel truck begins to careen into a crowd that is awaiting a political rally of a man known as Jeremiah Clutcher. He's an openly racist senator. And of course, neither Green Lantern cares for him, particularly John. And they rush to the scene and they make the save. And John, though, he makes sure to puncture the truck just enough that Jeremiah Clutcher gets his face covered with oil. And we see John's wicked sense of humor here because he looks at, you know, Senator Clutcher and says, "Hey, didn't I see you picking cotton somewhere?" So I remember the first time I saw that and I just cracked up. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? The guy deserves what John is, the point John is trying to prove.
Yeah, exactly. And you see that with John, that he definitely has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and he's not afraid to let people know what he thinks there. And of course, you know, it's easy to not like Senator Clutcher. And and that image, you'll see that a lot in a lot of different places on the internet. That's a very famous panel by Neil Adams. Mm-hmm. And some really good writing by Dennis O'Neill there.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, now Hal, he kind of berates John for abusing his power, and John gets right back up in Hal's face and calls him Whitey, which I also thought was funny. So Hal assigns guarding Senator Clutcher to John while he's in town. And I'm like, okay, well, that's ouch. That hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
And Hal says, and by the way, don't call me Whitey, you know, and he says, you know, he who is without sin cast the first stone.
Yeah. I like that call.
That's from the Gospel of John, chapter 7 and part of 8. That's the woman accused of adultery. That's an allusion to that. And see, that's why you tune into this podcast. You get social commentary and theology wrapped with comic books.
Who knew we were doing all this? I guess I got to bone up on my passages.
So the scene cuts to Clutcher rally, where he whips up his base by saying that he actually doesn't hate African Americans, but they just aren't as smart as white people.
Sounds familiar. It sounds like I've heard this rhetoric before by a politician. I won't say who, but we all, I mean.
Well, I've heard it too many times over the years.
Throw him out there. He kind of looks like Larfleeze, but I'll just leave it there. Anyway, continue.
We won't jump down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. You can infer who I'm talking about yourself, folks.
So John and Hal, they watch on in disapproval, obviously. And we see a would-be assassin try to shoot Clutcher. And, of course, Hal jumps into the action, and John seemingly bails. But we actually see John save the life of a police officer in the parking lot, and we see that John has unraveled the secret, which is that Clutcher wanted to make a scene where it would seem like there were numerous black men on a rampage, and he figures out that these are just plants by Clutcher, and they take Clutcher into custody, and they turn him into the police. And then we see a really nice moment at the end. We see Hal and John with one another, and Hal says, you know, I may not like your style, but, you know, there's some respect there. And John says, well, style isn't any more important than color. So a really kind of a poignant moment to end this part of the story. And then, of course, there's a Green Arrow story after this one.
We're not going to get into the Green Arrow portion because we're not a Green Arrow podcast. But yeah, I mean, and that's not to say I don't like Green Arrow. I love Green Arrow. It's just not the point of this podcast. When they have more direct crossovers, of course we're going to cover the Green Arrow portions because it's part, you know, it's directly interacting with Green Lantern, but it's a different story. I love the fact that John was the one who uncovered
the plot by Clutcher, yes.
Because, you know, we're always talking about how much we enjoy seeing Hal display his intelligence when sort of foiling a criminal. And to see John do that and, you know, have figured out prior to what Clutcher was up to, I think is very important because not only does he have that confidence and that swagger and that attitude that really gets him noticeable right off the bat, his mental intuitiveness to be able to, you know, piece that together and solve that and sort of, you know, even prove Hal wrong.
Yes.
Is very important because I think when you have multiple Earth Green Lanterns and they're essentially reserves a bunch of them for when Hal Jordan is not active, or at least that if that's their initial conceit, you have to do something that, even though that's what their purpose is in story, you have to do something when you're first introducing them to make each of these you know, other Earth Green Lanterns.
Yeah, you have to differentiate.
Important and recognizable so that when the reader is reading a story about them, they're not like, oh, this is just the stand-in. I don't have to read this story. You know what I mean? So
yes.
It's very, and again, if I'm judging the two, and I'm not trying to not, because I know somebody's going to take this the wrong way. I don't hate Guy Gardner. All I'm going to say here is that they did a better job of introducing John and making him memorable and stand out than they did with Guy Gardner.
And I would agree. Like I said, he made a much bigger splash early on than Guy did. You know, Guy was, it took some time for Guy to really develop and, like I said, be differentiated from Hal. Whereas you saw it with John right away. And one of the things I like about John is that, you know, he is the most I think, intellectual of all the titular Green Lanterns. He, you know, he's led the Green Lantern Corps. He's led the Justice League. So you see that there's just a natural leader, a problem solver there. And you saw that with this issue right away. They lay the foundation for a character that, again, is going to be somewhat similar to Hal Jordan in kind of essential ways, but at the same time, different from Hal Jordan. And you can get into him in his own right as a character.
Yeah, for sure.
So what would you rate this story? We're not going to rate the whole book
First of all, I got to say, I loved how meaningful and deep this issue was. Like, there was meat on this bone. It wasn't just, you know, cotton candy fluff. And again, that, look, I'm not saying every comic that I read has to be some deep, you know, political statement or social commentary. But when they are, and when they're done this well, anybody that dismisses comics is just ignorant.
Well said.
Yeah. What would I rate this issue this story? Easily 10 out of 10.
And I was going to say the exact same thing. I mean, this story, it hits on all cylinders. It's like you say, it's one of those stories that you read that, you know, it's not just escapism. It really makes you think. And even though it's done in a way that's very palatable and enjoyable, but it really makes you think. And so I would definitely rate it a 10 out of 10. And likewise, the cover is very famous. You know, John Stewart standing over an injured Hal Jordan. That's been, you know, parodied many ways, and it's been used, it's been revisited in many ways. And this is one of the most important issues in Green Lantern's history, as well as DC Comics history. And as a Green Lantern fan, I'm very proud that this is part of our history. And when you look at the development of African-American characters or minority characters in DC Comics, that Green Lantern was one of the first to attempt that. So I'm very proud of that.
Well said. All right. So shall we, with all that said, shall we move on to the next issue?
Yeah. So actually, John's second appearance was in 1974, Justice League number 110. By writer Len Wein, Dick Dillon, and Dick Giordano did the art. And we open with Superman and Batman escorting a man playing Santa Claus to some orphans on Christmas Eve. But there's an immediate explosion and Santa is killed. So that's dark.
just a smidge.
So,
scare the crap out of the children. That's all right.
Yeah, there you go. There, you know, the Santa's helper, Santa Claus is dead. And there's a note and a key left for the Justice League of America. And it says underneath the arch, and again, we're talking about St. Louis here, there are bombs that will destroy a city block unless the Justice League finds the explosives. And the Justice League is summoned, and Hal is preparing for a Christmas Eve date. And he slips on a bar of soap, and out goes Green Lantern's light.
That's an interesting way to take out the Green Lantern. I mean, imagine Sinestro sitting God knows where in space thinking, really? That's all it took was a bar of soap?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Hal Jordan had a long history of head injuries. So that's not the first time that happened.
It's like Lex Luthor on Smallville. How many times he got hit in the head and forgot stuff? If I had a running tally, there would be a drinking game out of that.
So then the scene shifts back to the old urban ghetto. I guess John doesn't travel very much, but we find him in the ghetto again, and the ring grabs him, and it takes him to the JLA satellite. And both the ring and Green Arrow vouch for John when the other Justice League members question who he is. They're like, obviously, that's not Hal Jordan. So the main narrative of this issue is that the Justice League of America, they have this mysterious key, and they have to find the lock that it goes to, or a city block of innocent people will be blown up the way Santa was. So, as the Justice League tries to figure out what their next move is, obviously, again, they are in St. Louis. Red Tornado asks Green Lantern to make the key Geiger counter sensitive, so it will be able to direct them to the lock. Which I really like that use of the ring there.
Oh, me too. It amazes me how creative these writers and artists can get with the ring. I mean, you know what I mean? It's really an impressive thing.
And yeah, like I said, and that's why, you know, Green Lantern has always been one of the reasons why it's always been so interesting to me is there are so many different ways that they problem solve, that they address situations. And, you know, it's not just a set power set. They can do almost anything. And again, you see it utilized in a unique way here. So, yeah. So Red Tornado flies through the neighborhood and the key reacts to a particular lock. Superman meets Red Tornado there. And then we see Green Lantern carrying Batman and Green Arrow and Black Canary with him, which is, that's another interesting way that the ring has always been used to transport non-flying characters. I've always thought that was a nice visual.
And you know, Batman really loves that, being carried around by other people. Like, I know that he hates it. Well, in later years, we know that he hates it when Superman does it, and we know that he hates it when the Flash runs him around at super speed. So I can't imagine that he'd be, the modern interpretation of Batman would be too fond of this scenario.
yeah, especially given his past interactions with Green Lanterns. You got to think that's not his favorite thing to happen, but. Yeah, so that's where we are with this story. And as they arrive at this building, John has a moment where he has to make a tough call. He's approached by some kids who appear to be poor and freezing, and they ask him for some money. And not only does John not have money because he's in uniform, but he has to stay focused on the situation. However, he promises to find the kids when the mission is over. So the Justice League, they proceed into this rat-infested house, and we see that they're being watched. Now, if you know some of the older DC villains, you may have already figured out who this is, even if you've never read this issue. And now suddenly a trap door opens, and they all the Justice League members fall into it. Now, I must say, I question this part of the story, because we have three flying characters who somehow hit the floor.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, definitely a little bit of a logic flaw there.
It's suspending disbelief that they would be caught and not catch themselves as they're falling, but yeah.
Yeah. So that leads to a miniature sun descending on them, which means John's ring can't affect it because it's yellow. Of course, the yellow impurity is still in play here. But it also has some kind of red radiation, too, so it weakens Superman. Now, he's able to free the rest of the Justice League through tag-teaming basically with Green Arrow and Batman to throw him up at this miniature sun, but he is seemingly evaporated by this. So Superman is not in this story at this point anymore because they think he's been killed by colliding with this red sun radiation. So what did you think of that, Adam?
Well, the idea that they thought Superman was dead.
Yes.
I mean, at this point now, just answer me a quick question, because I wasn't, you know, obviously it was the 70s. I wasn't around yet, so kind of hard to read books when you're not born. I wish I could have found a way around that, but sadly I wasn't able to. Back in this period, were they aware of Superman's vulnerability to magic?
You know, I can't exactly remember when that started, but I'm pretty sure that's a modern thing. Okay. I don't remember stories back. And now, again, I was 1 year old when this story got released.
Right, but so
I don't
remember. Yeah.
I don't remember the magic vulnerability being something that happened till later on. So I mean,
it's kind of a little bit far-fetched to think, well, he's dead because of that. I mean, especially, I'm assuming they've seen him do a lot of. Impossible, impressive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they all jump to that conclusion, I think it takes, as a reader, as a modern reader reading this back, it takes a big leap to like, because as soon as you're reading it with your modern sensibilities, you're like, yeah, come on, really? You think he's dead? Don't you guys know any better?
Right.
You know, I'm having an internal conversation with these fictional characters. Like, come on, just snap yourselves out of it. He's fine. But yeah, that was a little far-fetched. But like I said, it goes back to what you were saying. All the flying characters seem to fall off the map here temporarily, and it was a little bit much. But again, you got to take it for, I guess, when it was written and the fact that they probably weren't thinking too deeply in terms of you know, they wanted the it's kind of hard with a Justice League cast of characters, depending on the villain, to put them in serious peril. So it's, you know, I don't necessarily criticize the writers for that. It's just it's not a very believable thing to worry about in this particular scenario.
Right. And even though they mention red sunlight, I mean, you know, that which depowers Kryptonians, by the way, for those of you who don't know,
of course,
you know, Superman, I mean, he's been in those situations before where he's been depowered and, you know, he's absorbed a lot more red sunlight than that and it didn't kill
him.
And
he always makes it through, right? So,
yeah. So the remaining Justice League members, they end up in another room with a Calliope that is spewing poison gas. And Black Canary, she's able to use her ultrasonic scream to hold the gas at bay while the others escape. And we see that they're being led through the house by a villain known as the Key. And this is the modern Key. This is the second version of that villain. And that's who is kind of pulling the strings here, which makes sense. Obviously, the main clue at the beginning of the story was a Key. So this is a villain known as the Key.
I got to be honest with you. I had no idea who this was.
You know, it's a weird looking visual when they show him later on. There was a panel where he's being released from prison and he has that, you know, the big key thing on his head, and he's wearing a suit at the same time. I was like, well, that's an interesting picture.
Yeah, right. Once they revealed, but it's like, even though I know the name, it's like, who? I'm like, okay, but who? Who are you?
Like I said,
who are you and why are you a threat? Like, really?
Yeah, we do get an explanation. So, so stay with us here. We'll let you know what happened.
Yeah.
So the Justice League, they're now in another room, and next up are some giant balls, and there's a joke here, and I'll just let that go. And one of the balls absorbs Batman. So now we have Green Arrow and the Red Tornado and John are the only ones left because Canary stayed behind too, trying to hold the poison gas at bay. So we're down to three Justice League members in the narrative now.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, when you mentioned all, like, the whole balls situation, I'm not going to get perverse. All I kept thinking, and when I was seeing it unfold, was like, all I can think of is, the episode of The Big Bang Theory when Sheldon goes in the ball pit.
Oh, yes.
And keeps popping up saying Bazinga. That's Bazinga. All I could think of. Yeah.
That was a memorable scene, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, as John is escaping, he uses the exclamation "Sweet Sister," which is something that he's used a number of times over the years, and I've always been a fan of that. "Sweet Sister." So, now John and Red Tornado, they end up facing off with giant toy soldiers who are able to turn yellow, which of course puts Green Lantern at a disadvantage. But they're able to get out of that room and into the tunnel. And we see that the Key is waiting for them, and he's motivated by revenge on the Justice League because Superman once tried to imprison him at the Fortress of Solitude in suspended animation, but a judge ruled that that was unconstitutional. But in prison, the Key learns that all these chemicals that he has learned, that he has used on himself, he's injected into himself, they're actually killing him. So he's paroled early because he doesn't have long to live. Mm. But not only do John and the Tornado make it to the Key, but the rest of the League, of course, they're alive because the Phantom Stranger, has arrived on the scene, and he's posed as one of the Key's underlings. I believe they're called the Key Men. And he's actually been saving the Justice League members as they seemingly died. Right before they died, he was pulling them out of those situations. And so they, you know, they all kind of unite at the end against the villain, which is the Key. But the Key turns what's called the Primal Key to detonate these bombs around that city block. Now, once again, I looked at this and said, okay, well, you know, why didn't, you know, Black Canary just, you know, pop his eardrums with her scream? Or why didn't Superman, you know, use super speed to stop him before he did this? But again, I guess, you know, the just moving the narrative narrative forward. So the Justice League, they evacuate the civilians, and we see that John, and this is a really cool moment here, he contains the blast by creating a construct dome. So as the blast goes off, everyone is, again, out of the blast radius, but he's able to contain it. And he actually uses his ring to rebuild the buildings like new. And now the kids who came to him before the big battle, they have a clean place to exist for Christmas Eve. And they look very happy. And for the first time, we also see Oliver call him Green Lantern instead of John, because he says, you know, you've earned being called Green Lantern now.
Right, and I think that's an important, you know, thing. It's one thing to be chosen, but then you've gotta earn the merit of the ring. Like, it's one thing to say you have the willpower, right? You have all the tools, but how do you put those tools? It's like with anything in real life, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You may be very gifted at doing something, but if you don't do anything with that talent or that skill that you have, you're not, you know, living up to your potential or earning that, you know, the praise for it. So I thought this was very, in a sci-fi kind of situation, a story where you have this sci-fi character and this conceit of the ring, you know, that's a very human situation unfolding. And I like that. I like when you can put a little, you know, yes, Green Lantern, you have to have the sci-fi and fanciful with the Green Lantern. But if you could root it in some sort of humanity, you know, that's it's the best of both worlds. I also really like what John did for those kids.
Yeah, it definitely shows you that he has a community conscience about him. And that's something that, again, that persists until this day. John is always wanting to be a true... Yeah, and be a hero outside of just putting the bad guys away. He's someone who's always looking to do those kind of things.
The ring doesn't get to his head. You know what I mean? I know my roots. I know who I have to protect. But also, it's like he made a promise. And I like the workaround that he got. He's like, the ring prevents me from building them an entirely new place, you know, places to live. But I can recreate the structures as they were, which I think was a cool little loophole, if you will.
Yeah, and again, that's another interesting way that we see the ring be used. So
yeah.
So as far as this story goes, there is a short epilogue. Green Lantern is not in it, but it's Superman and Black Canary and Green Arrow. They give Red Tornado a new costume, and they try to explain to him what Christmas is. And of course, they still can't do it because, again, he's a robot. And but old, you know, cantankerous Oliver wishes them a Merry Christmas anyway. So it's and of course Superman wishes all the readers Merry Christmas. So it's
George Reeves. That was very George Reeves when he essentially quote unquote looks at the camera, which is us, and says,
good
Merry
point.
Christmas.
Good point, like by the that. Way. So there's a follow up story with the JSA, but again, you know, we're not talking about that today. Alan Scott is in that story, by the way.
Right, but we'll do something with Alan Scott. We'll do a little spotlight on him down the road as well.
Sure.
Can't leave him out. So
how would you rate that story?
You know, it was a little weird reading a Christmas story in May, I gotta say. And, you know, Santa biting it at the beginning is a little bit dark. But a 7.5, I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I would say I gave it a 7. You know, the overall narrative is not bad. There were some logic problems because, again, there were things happening that the superhero's power should have you know, logically, you know, taken care of in other ways. But it wasn't a bad story. It moved along. And again, as far as being a Green Lantern fan, it was a good piece of development for John. So overall, I was happy
agreed.
With that story.
Agreed. 100% yeah. agreed. Yeah.
So how about we go forward to 1977 in Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 94.
See, on this show, we do have a time machine, sort of, because we can just jump forward, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we help you traverse through years past and through many, many dimensions, and that's what we're here for. So
that's right.
So this story is called Lure for an Assassin, and it's by Dennis O'Neill and Mike Grell. And so we see that Hal is in space while Green Arrow has been captured by three men claiming to be government agents. And Hal arrives back on Earth, and he intervenes to save Oliver, but he collapses. So Oliver surmises that it's some kind of extraterrestrial illness, and Hal has to be taken to the Guardians of the Universe. So Oliver has Dinah Lance alert John Stewart. And so we see John again. He says the oath, charges his ring, and he flies to Hal Jordan's side. And we see that Oliver and Dinah and Carol and Tom Kalmaku are watching over Hal. And John kind of concurs with Oliver's plan. He says, yes, I should take him to the Guardians. So he flies off into space carrying Hal. Now, much of this issue focuses on Green Arrow and Black Canary. The crux being that Black Canary is captured and Green Arrow has to assassinate the president of the United States at the behest of a villain known as Colonel Crisp, or Black Canary will be killed. So the last we see of John, we get a few pages of that. We see John trying to avoid a fragment of a neutron star that's pulling both he and Hal toward it. And of course, again, if they're pulled into it, they're going to die. And so that's how that issue leaves them.
You know, what's interesting is that the way John was sort of reacting on his flight through space, he comments a couple of times that he hasn't done this in a while. So I'm wondering if in the intervening years from the last issue that we read, you know, the Christmas issue, had John not been Green Lantern? Like, had he been, like, he in that period, was he strictly only if Hal's incapacitated can you?
Yes, at the time, it was only, you know, you didn't get the multiple Green Lanterns from Earth working together. It was only, you know, when Hal was incapacitated or for whatever reason couldn't perform his duties, you had the backup instead of the number of Green Lanterns from Earth all working in concert.
Okay. So it's conceivable that he probably didn't suit up for a very long time. Could have been that many years even.
Yeah, it seems that way. The character only makes five appearances in the first 10 years of his publication between 1971 and 1981. So
because reading that was a little weird because I'm used to them all being around and just doing their own thing, you know, like John's with the Justice League now and Jessica's off in God knows where, and you know, Hal's doing his thing, right? So I'm used to them all operating sort of simultaneously.
Yeah, concurrently with one another, right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So to hear him talk like that was very, it was a little jarring, I got to say.
Yeah, that's definitely unusual. If you've only read the modern Green Lantern comics and you see them all operating as a unit or at least, you know, in pairs or something like that, you're not used to just one of or two of them sitting on the sidelines waiting for, you know, to be the replacement. So again, different time period and different rules for the mythos at the time. So something interesting too, I thought, I read the mailbag comments. And for those of you who don't know what a mailbag is, it was kind of the early version of internet message boards where people would, you know, send in their opinions about what they wanted to see and what they had been liking about the various issues. And we see a guy named Kevin Craig said that he'd like to see more of Hal's personal life, but Kevin realizes that's not possible because he has to share so much of the story with Oliver. And Kevin says, much to my dismay. So we see an early detractor of you know, what was going on at the time with Hal being paired with Green Arrow, which, you know, I thought it's interesting to go back and see people's opinions from 40 plus years ago.
So it sounds like us with, when we talk about Kyle and his lack of,
Exactly. So yeah, it's very interesting to see that, you know, the thoughts of people from back then. You know, there wasn't any internet to record these things back then. So you get this nice little snapshot when you read these mailbags at the end of comic books. And that's something that I still find fascinating.
Yeah.
So how about we move on to issue number 95?
Yeah.
It's hard to put a rating on.
Yeah, you can't really because it was so brief. So we'll rate it as
right.
One.
Yeah. So we issue number 95, we get a story called Terminal for a Tragedy. And John's in space, and like you alluded to earlier, he bemoans the fact that he's still kind of new at this. And he, you know, Hal is unconscious, and John wishes that Hal was awake so he could ask him some questions. But aliens intervene at the last second as John and Hal are being pulled towards this neutron star, and they take John and Hal on board, and they tell John that Hal is on death's door because of there's kind of a psychological / soul sickness type of thing, and that he won't even make it to the Guardians, that they have to deal with this right now. So I actually looked the aliens up because I wondered if they had made other appearances in other comics, but I didn't find anything. These were just aliens that were used for this story. So Hal is put into a device called a Tellutron, where he has to confront his own inner demons. And he actually battles it out with like an image of himself. And of course, Hal wins and he struggles out of the machine. He says the oath to regain his vigor, and we see that John thinks to himself that Hal's a class act. So we see that friendship starting to develop, you know, that, and, you know, they've been partners many times over the years. So we see them, you know, starting to develop a mutual respect for one another.
Yeah.
So they return to Earth to stop the villains who are trying to force Oliver into assassinating, you know, the President of the United States. And John scoops up Colonel Crisp and calls him a turkey, which, by the way, was a very common insult back in the 70s and 80s. You know,
made me laugh to hear it, though.
Yeah. So, turkey, that was something I definitely remembered hearing that as a kid. You know, when you got mad at somebody, you called him a turkey. So what were your thoughts on this issue?
Well, the interesting thing was the battle with his soul, or the infected part of the soul, or however you want to think about it. Because, you know, prior in that very same issue, we hear John saying, you know, I wish he was awake so he could give me advice. And, you know, when he hears, later on in the issue, when he hears Hal do the oath, he's like, man, he's so confident in doing that. I wish I could be like him. So, like, you see, you know, John have this sort of reverence is the wrong word, but respect and admiration for how, you know, like Hal Jordan as a Green Lantern. Like, you know, in modern times, he's the standard, right?
Yes.
So to see how, conversely, to see Hal himself having those doubts about himself, basically, you know, is he good enough? He's not good enough. He's a loser. You know, all those things that he was thinking of is very interesting because you have how the other Earth Green Lantern see him compared to his own inner fears about himself, right?
Right.
So that was very interesting.
And John was able to look on in the Tellurotron. He was able to see Hal battling it out with himself inside that, which I thought was interesting.
That was very interesting. And the funny thing, too, is when I was watching, you know, Green Lantern battle the infected soul version of Hal Jordan, projection, it reminded me of Superman 3 in the fight where Superman fights like his inner demon.
I had the same thought. Yep, the junkyard scene. Yes.
Yeah, which is the best, which is one of the best fight scenes in the Christopher Reeve Superman era. So, but yeah, it reminded me of that. But I found it an interesting story point, and to use the soul in that way, I thought was fascinating. So overall, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, we see, you know, from John's perspective, we see this blossoming friendship, and, you know, John realizes that the job is bigger than he initially thought, but he's a brave guy, and so he's ready to take on these challenges, and that's the end to his third appearance over these two issues. So that's the first three appearances of John Stewart in DC Comics.
Yeah, I like the fact that he... In all three appearances, he's called to do on something. He's called to do or deal with something important, and he's really thrust into the forefront. I mean, without him on the scene in these two issues, Hal Jordan could have very well died, right? So,
exactly.
He was instrumental in saving him. And then in that first appearance, I mean, he foiled the racist senator's plans, right? So, I mean, the sheer importance that they give him right off the bat is quite impressive. And like I said, like I've been saying through this whole time, they really make him a notable character. Like, you notice him right away. Never once do you think, away, he's the afterthought or the throwaway. And I really like that because, like I said, you have to make sure, like, to use wrestling terminology, I think when you're dealing with more than one Earth Green Lantern being around, even if they're not active at the same times, you have to make each one of them, you have to put each one of them over, because if Hal's not in the book, but you want people to read Green Lantern, they have to latch on to something interesting about whichever version, whichever Earthbound Lantern they're reading. So I think it's very important, and it was very a very solid way they set up John in these first three issues overall.
Yeah. And, you know, I do want to say this to people. I know a lot of people, their exposure to John has been the Justice League cartoons.
That was mine to start, by the way.
Yeah. And by the way, I love Phil Lamar's voice work. Oh. And I do love that cartoon. But I do want to tell people, if that's the only exposure you've had to John, just take the time and get some of his comics, because he's so interesting. He does so many things with the ring that they really didn't touch on in the TV series.
Yeah.
He's definitely a character that is worthy of your time and money. So,
oh, definitely, absolutely. I was in the same boat. I first saw him in the Justice League cartoon, and I think the one thing they have in common, the easily recognizable thing is the confidence, the attitude, and the creativity because of the architect, what they can create because of the architecture background. That's evident even in the cartoon. But like I said, to deepen your understanding of the character, definitely check out some of the older first appearances, for sure.
Yes. I concur. Yes.
It's kind of hard to rate that last two issues, though, because it's just a short sample size of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, he plays an important supporting role, but again, right, they're focused more on Green Arrow and Black Canary than they are the Green Lanterns, right, in this issue, these two issues. So
it's hard to give that one, those two, a rating, but yeah. I think that wraps up pretty much the episode, Donnie. So, I know it's going to be until next month before they hear us again, but if they want to continue talking Green Lantern with you, which I don't see why they wouldn't, where can our listeners do that?
Well, you can catch me on Twitter as The Emerald Enthusiast, and I've done quite a few reviews of products lately, including Daryl Banks sending me the original concept panels for The Death of Alexandra DeWitt in Volume 3.
That was an impressive video to watch. That was nice.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I had a great time doing that, and I was so giddy when I got that in the mail. And I also want to say to Myra Rumsey and Phil Bova, who recently had me on the podcast of OA, thank you very much, as well as Miss Darlene, who helped me celebrate Green Lantern's 80th anniversary. And hopefully we can get some of those individuals on this podcast in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just going to say this right now. I'd love to have all three of those individuals you mentioned on the show, because the... You know, I have a handful of DC / superhero podcasts that I listen to. And one of my favorites is the podcast of OA. So,
likewise.
I definitely am working towards having both of those gentlemen on. I've put out some feelers initially with Phil, and he does want to come on, so we're going to work that out for sure.
Wonderful.
And then once I have him locked in, I will do the same with Myron. I would definitely like to have Myron on. And in terms of Miss Darlene, I think it was right. I saw her cosplay, and it's fantastic. And I would also like to have her on, so I will. You know, Donnie and I will have a conversation and see where she can best be, you know, we want to get a topic that would, you know, fit her best and really, you know, have her be able to talk about her favorites and also her cosplay. So we'll discuss that, and then I'll put the feeders out there. But all these three people will be... we'll hopefully, if they agree, be able to come on our show and talk. And I think, I don't want to give anything away, but I think the plan is, we talked about next episode probably being a Jessica Cruz related episode.
I think so. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and we're gonna deal with her origins. And if that's the case, then we're going to be having one of these guests on, and I'm not going to tell you who, because I got to leave something for the surprise. I can't just give you everything, you know, for free. We're already giving you the podcast for free. You want to know who it is? You just slip me a PayPal payment, and I'll tell you. No, I'm kidding. No extortion on this show.
I got to say Shway to get my $5 from you, right? Shway.
That's right. So. Definitely go check out Donnie's guest appearance on the podcast of OA.
Yeah, go that was number 164, the podcast of OA 164.
Right. And then go check out his cameo appearance in her video, in her cosplay video. He pulls a Nick Fury, and that's all I'll kind of say. It's very Nick Fury-esque in terms of when he appears. And it was very sharply dressed. Well, I got a compliment on that. Well done.
Thank you so much. That, you know, comparing me to Nick Fury, that's definitely a compliment.
All you were missing was the eye patch. and then also, folks, on his Twitter, which did you call out your Twitter yet? Did you mention it?
Yes.
Okay. So Donnie has a picture of himself in a because we're all, you know, if you go out, you're supposed to wear a mask, and he's got himself in a Green Lantern Hal Jordan face mask, which I thought was cool.
That's actually on Facebook, but later on this weekend, I will post a picture of myself in that mask.
Hopefully post it on Twitter so you can see it, yeah. But it's a cool mask. And when I saw that, I said, okay, well, that's cool. But I think, Donnie, I think you could do a very good cosplay of Bane from The Dark Knight Rises. So I'd like to see the Bane mask. Yeah. And then you'd have to do the voice, but we'll get into that on a different...
Well, let's not stand on ceremony, Mr. Wayne.
Oh, boy. But, so definitely check those out, and also, you know, converse with Donnie on Twitter. He's a fun guy to talk to. Otherwise, I wouldn't have brought him onto the podcast. And then, if you want to talk to me as well, you can. On Twitter, it's at @Adam_LeafsFan. We also have a... podcast network page on Facebook. It's the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page. And if you go there and ask for permission to join the group, one of my podcast co-hosts that is on there will, or myself, will happily add you, and we can continue the conversation there. We hope you enjoyed this spotlight on Jon Stewart as much as we enjoyed recording it. And remember that to keep yourself safe, as we always say at the end of each podcast, and that the Green Lantern is forever, from the first construct to the last.
I see. I was going to sign off the show with a very kind of serious
Brian,
win.
You could do your own sign off. That was just mine.
you blindsided me though with that. So I'm going to go have a cup of coffee at Radu's. So make sure to give him a tip.
So long, everybody.
Of all the lanterns who have ever worn the ring, there was one whose light shined brightest. At first, his humanity was thought to be a weakness, and yet it proved to be his greatest strength.
Servitude, where every individual is just an extension of your mind? No thanks. And I won't let you use the core against the rest of the universe.
What's the matter?
I just learned the thing this morning.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern.